Hello and welcome to the Post-Sermon Podcast with Pastor Jeremy. We're in the book of Mark, and this Sunday we began to talk about how Jesus deals with our failures. And the case study was Peter. But of course, all the disciples had let Jesus down. How exactly did Jesus restore Peter to a place where we now have a letter from him in the Bible?
Hi, Nat. Good to be back on this podcast. And we are revisiting the sermon from Sunday. It has been such an amazing series as we look back on the Gospel of Mark. And we're coming close to the end. And I really hope that each of you would be able to say, I was there for every sermon, or I've heard every sermon, or you're able to pass on that link to other people as well. And you can pray for me also as I begin to think and pray about whether to release the Gospel of Mark and the work from the sermons as somewhat of a paper, a PDF, or maybe an ebook. I've just been thinking about what to do about that. And if you think it's going to be a help, just write into me and let me know. And continued questions about the Gospel of Mark so that we can wrap it up. I think I have one or two more to take you through, and then we're done with 30 parts in the Gospel of Mark through the entire year of 2023-24. It's been amazing. So coming back to our thought here, yeah, we ended our sermon, we ended our thoughts on Sunday talking about misplaced confidence and the fact that our confidence should be in the risen Christ. Our confidence should be in the shepherd. He's the one who holds us. He's the one who keeps us in his hand. No one can pluck us out of his hand. It's his covenant. It's his blood that wrote a new covenant for us. So we are wrapped up, we are secured in that one-way deed, that one-way covenant. And our confidence is in God's character, and he is faithful. Even when we are unfaithful, he remains faithful. In fact, God says, I have engraved you in the palm of my hand. I have drawn you with a long arm. I have loved you with an everlasting love. So we are kept by his word, we are kept by his power, we are kept by his promise. So that's what we talked about. But then the question you just raised, and that's something we should not let go of so easily, and that is, what did Jesus do then to restore Peter? We all fall, and we know that God deals with our failure in a very different, very gracious way. So what happened to Peter? And I want to remind you that all of them fell. They all, first of all, Jesus said you would all fall away. And they all did. They all fell away. They all deserted him. He was alone. And that was very much part of the gospel story as well, because when Jesus hung there, he hung alone. There was no other man to share that suffering and no other man who could. Jesus hung alone and everybody left him alone. And therein lies the power of Christ, who is all-sufficient. He is the all-sufficient one, the El Shaddai. And he rose from the grave even more qualified and more equipped to be our everything. Peter, how did Jesus deal with Peter? Before saying that, let me just clarify the fact that betrayal and denial are not the same thing. To betray Jesus was to place him in the hands of the Sanhedrin, Pilate, Herod, so that he would be put to death. That's pretty permanent. And that changes the story. And that is not just betrayal, but complete rejection of Christ. Because when you betray a friend to be crucified, you don't expect him to come back. And you basically are done with that relationship. So in that, Judas was done with. So Judas's betrayal is different to Peter's denial. And Peter's denial was a momentary lapse of judgment, a sinful act, unfaithfulness, weakness, fear, discouragement, etc., etc. And we all struggle with that. And when Jesus dealt with Peter, there is so much to learn about how he handled that. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he revealed himself this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael, the two others, his disciples, were together. Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. And they said to him, we will go with you. They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore. This is post-resurrection. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, children, do you have anything to eat? Do you have any fish? And they answered him, no. He said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat. That immediately should have sent a hint their way. Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. So they did. They cast it and now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of the fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, so he's talking about himself here. John is talking about himself. He says, that disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter. So John said to Peter, it is the Lord. It's the Lord. Then when John kind of confirmed that to Peter, this is what Peter did. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garments, for he was stripped down for work. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. He just jumped. He jumped out of the boat. He had to be with Jesus. The other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, but about 100 yards off. That's what I'm talking about. You know, it's like we deny the Lord, but heart of hearts, we miss him. We miss being in fellowship with God. We want to be with Jesus. We love Christ. So even on Sunday, I was saying, you know, we beat up on Peter. We beat up on the disciples. But the fact is that he wasn't hating Christ. He loved Christ. But even when we love God, we have fears. We have issues. We have hurdles. We have competing desires, competing relationships, and competing priorities. And we fail and we fall. But given the opportunity, you'll see our hearts. Peter jumped. Like he was always ready to say something first, he jumped. He jumped out of the boat. The other disciples then followed with all the fish dragging there. When they got onto the land, they saw a charcoal fire, and Jesus had already set up a little barbecue. He had some bread ready. He knew they were going to bring fish. No big guess there. So Simon Peter went abroad and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn, just part of God's providence and protection. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. Come and have breakfast. So the first thing Jesus did after rising again and after Peter had denied him, and after a grueling night on Thursday night, after 3 days of horrific guilt, an all-time low for Peter, the first thing Jesus did when he meets Peter again is he takes him out to breakfast. He takes him out to breakfast and he feeds him. And he gives him a comforting time. Jesus said to them, come, have breakfast. Now none of the disciples dared to ask him, who are you? So there was this glorified body that Jesus had. He was somewhat recognizable, but in some way also not. Because first of all, he's been crucified, he's been buried. How on earth do we expect him to look the same, right? So there was those issues that one has to discuss further into the passage. But none of the disciples dared to ask, who are you? They just kind of knew it was the Lord. Because who else could it be, right? And Jesus came and took the bread and he gave it to them. There's something familiar. And so with the fish. And this was now the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. So what did Jesus then say to Peter? I can't wait. He says in verse 15 of John chapter 21, when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Now, pastors, scholars, and professors alike have gone to town with what each of these words could have meant. But let's just look at how Jesus spoke to Peter. Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? All we can tell is that there is a comparative love, and Jesus is trying to figure out whether Simon's love for him, that's Jesus, supersedes every other love. He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my sheep. A few minutes passed. A little bit of conversation passes, and he says to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, tend to my sheep. And he said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was kind of grieved. He didn't know what Jesus was digging at, you know. What is Jesus trying to bring up? Is Jesus going to confront him about the denial? Is this the moment that he has to face up to his failure? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said emphatically to the Lord, You know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus says to him, feed my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. In brackets, verse 19 says, this he said to show what kind of death he was to glorify God with. And after saying that, he got up and said, follow me. Brothers and sisters, this is insane. This is how Jesus deals with failure. He goes back to the last time you made a commitment and he says, let's finish that. Let's finish that commitment. So what's the last time Peter made a commitment? He said to Jesus, even if all of them desert you, even if all of them deny you, I am willing to die for you. I am willing to die for you. And Jesus takes up that. Rather than the denial, rather than the girl, rather than the fire, rather than the three times, the cock crowing, forget all that. That's just a story. Jesus goes back, hey, remember what you said? You said you'd die for me. Well, you know what? You will. But it won't be to save me. It'll be to glorify God. Because I don't need you to die for me. You need me to die for you. And I did. And you made a commitment. And you couldn't follow through. That's where your failure was, to follow through on your commitment. But you will. And I will see you follow your commitment through to the end. And you will die for me. And your death will be a glory to God. That's how Jesus restores after failure. He takes us back to the last time we made a commitment. And he says, scratch everything that you owe me. Let's finish that. Let's make it happen. But there is a time, there is a place, there's a way, and there's a name in which it has to be done. At the end, the glory must go to God. If Peter died along with Jesus, Peter had to die for Jesus. All the disciples would die for Jesus. But it had to be done God's way. You and I, we may not be called to die for Jesus, but we have not kept our covenant. We have not kept our promises, our commitment. We have made big claims. And God is going to take us up on those claims and he will strengthen us and he will give us the ability to follow through on that. A day did come when Peter did have the guts to die for Jesus. And he did. And that's why you and I are talking about him today. People will talk about you and me because we kept our commitment, not because we failed it. God doesn't highlight our failures. He highlights our successes. And the beauty of Peter's success is framed in his failure. The beauty of Peter's death is framed in his inability to die for the Lord when it was called for. So how does Jesus deal with our failure? With tremendous grace and a second chance, again and again and again.
That was a beautiful continuation of the sermon, and I've been personally loving these. If you have been too, you can let us know by writing to us at pstjeremy@gmail.com, or if you're watching this on YouTube, drop us a comment, and we'll see you in the next podcast.